The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome in, everybody, to a very special edition of Need to Know, because many of us today need to know what's going on in this country, and especially what went on Saturday in Butler, Pennsylvania, probably one of the more iconic settings in terms of pastoral scenes and agriculture and animals and farms. And real salt of the earth people. These are people from just north of Pittsburgh. This is a community where you would say nothing ever happens here. It is the most unlikely of places to be the focus of the entire world right now. And I want to give you some different perspectives than perhaps you've been able to glean if you've been watching the news coverage or reading whatever information sources that you rely on. It's a whole different era. So everybody has their different ways to derive information. But of course, this is the type of situation that being a history person who is just obsessed and has spent a lifetime observing and commenting and having forming strong opinions on a lot of different aspects of American history. This event this Saturday in Pennsylvania is something that's going to go down in history for the duration of this country, however long that might be, hopefully hundreds more years. We are already in an existential situation in terms of not so much the dissolution of the country, but the dissolution of what the country was founded upon, the Judeo-Christian principles. And I'm going to try to have enough time to get into some of that today. It's kind of a multifaceted program, because I want to start out by saying that I'm really kind of I won't say limited, because she's done such an incredible job of educating me, and we've spent literally hours upon hours talking about her vocation in the most recent facet of her career. And I'm talking about my longtime broadcast partner, Terry Quillian, who was my co-host here in Birmingham on our news talk station, 99.5. We had a show called The Ride Home. Terry's background is in crisis communication. It is a communications period. She, right out of the University of Georgia, was in management positions with Southern Bell at that time, and went on to represent various organizations in communication, coaching, and instruction, had her own crisis management firm for a number of years. And then when George W. Bush was elected to the presidency, Terry took on a different role, working on the White House staff as one of their chief advance people. And the advance people, when the president's schedule is determined, go out and they go to the site of where the event is going to be. And they literally, along with the Secret Service, 10 or 11 days prior to an event, sometimes just a week before, but they go and basically map out every single step that the president will take, the details down to the most minute things that you would never considered on what needs to be arranged to make the event successful and secure and a success. And again, I already used success and secure. And it's really mind blowing to hear the intricate details that are covered and the coordination between the security folks, the Secret Service, and the president's team that is interested in him or her looking good and delivering a very positive event for people that may be attending. So with all that being said, on Saturday afternoon, I got a text from Terry, who's got a lot of family things going on, and I'm not talking about any kind of crisis there. She has had a lot of family in town this weekend, and was occupied with a house full of guests and different things. But we hadn't really spoken much this weekend, and I got a text from her Saturday afternoon, and she just was very succinct. I did not even know what had happened because it was just less than 10 minutes after the first reports that there had been shots fired at the president in his rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. And Terry's text basically, and I know I'm allowed to use these words on the air, but I'm going to, I'm still going to take the delicate approach. She just texted me simply, "They have totally effed this up." And I was going, what is she talking about? And then the special bulletin, you know, came across my screen. I knew in the next couple of minutes what had happened, basically, without any details. But she had already let me know that there had been a major breakdown, a major breach. Something went terribly wrong, and she didn't even have any details at that point. But she already knew, with the very earliest reports, that there was a major problem in terms of preparations and this advance team and the setup and the securing the both the perimeter, which is the primary area where the president's going to be standing, or the luminary speaker, whoever it might be, the protectee is the technical term. And of course the outer perimeter, but anything within 300-500 yards, heavily scrutinized and usually supported by air power, whether it's a drone or a helicopter flying overhead. But you have to remember, Donald Trump is not the current president of the United States. There has been some opposition to him even being afforded any Secret Service protection because of his, quote, controversial, unquote, standing. A bill Representative Benny Thompson presented to Congress a couple of weeks ago called for Trump to have his protection stripped, despite the fact that former presidents are always still subject to protection, but not at the level that the current president is. So you've had the Trump's campaign now showing documents that they have been soliciting the Homeland Security Department and the embattled director Mayorkas for more assets and more resources for security. So basically, you need to know that he had a protection detail, but it was kind of a skeleton crew in comparison to what he might have been used to as president. That's not necessarily nefarious. It's just the facts of the matter. But again, this is the highest profile, most watched man probably on the face of the earth, and certainly one of the most controversial and polarizing figures. If you're going to have security for events with 30 to 35,000 people in an open field, there's a lot of personnel that needs to cover that. And the first day, we have not heard a word from the Secret Service, which is mind-boggling, because the compulsory press conference where they gather everybody, including the local dog catcher, to make a comment in succession, that happened like midnight Saturday night. And it was the state police, the local police, and the FBI director, or the not the director, the FBI lead agent that had been set up to head up the investigation. When asked, where is the representative from the Secret Service? The answer was, well, they didn't have a representative available at this time. You know what breeds people's suspicion and people's conspiracy oriented mind and all the different things that start stirring around? It is non disclosure. It is basically the obvious battening down of the hatches, because the Secret Service knows right now that they are under the microscope. As Terry said, immediately they effed up, and this incident should never, ever have happened. If you know the extensive preparations and the detail that goes into these security measures at these kind of events. So they've taken the circle the wagons and stay out of sight situation. And it falls on local law enforcement. And you absolutely knew there'd be two excuses coming from government officials. And remember, this administration and this current federal government does not take responsibility for anything. This is absolutely consistent from the day Joe Biden was sworn in to the occupation of all of the departments and offices that are now part of the Washington fabric, most of them staffed by holdovers from the Obama years. In essence, Joe Biden, who's not cognitively able to function as president, is the figurehead for a third term of Barack Obama, who's really the guy behind the curtain pulling the strings. But all that's a different story. The bottom line is this administration and this current federal government does not take accountability for anything. And so don't expect them to be apologetic or point the finger at themselves. It's going to be, well, you know, there's not enough budget and resources for, you know, the non-president of the United States. The former president does get protection. And let's just say, as much as the scrutiny has gone now on what was not done properly, the response by the people on the ground, Secret Service folks and security people, to shield the president and secure him after the shots rang out, you really can't second guess that effort. Although there are people that are already saying, yeah, there were agents that were asking questions while they were still in the pile underneath the podium. Trump dropped down after feeling the shot that whizzed by his ear. And there's a remarkable, absolutely remarkable, maybe one of the greatest photos ever taken. The gentleman's name is Niles. He works for the New York Times. He's a veteran photojournalist, was right down in the well, right in front of the speaker's podium. And when the shots are fired, his instinct was not to drop to the ground like everybody else seemed to be. His instinct was to go forward and continue taking images with his camera. And it has caught the most maybe iconic photo of all time, because this photo, if you haven't seen it, get online and look. This photo shows the actual bullet whizzing past the outer ear of President Trump, who had just turned his head subtly a millisecond before the shots rang out to make reference to a screen behind him where he was getting ready to show some information on the giant screen to the crowd that was assembled on immigration statistics and how much border chaos had been there. But that timing of that graphic coming up and him just subtly turning his head almost to point the crowd in that direction is the reason that we're talking about the near miss and the amazing events of Saturday instead of talking about the assassination of a former president and right now very likely to be the next president of the United States. You talk about the threat to democracy. Assassinating the leading candidate and former president is the ultimate threat to democracy, because it takes democracy away. It takes the will of the people away. If one person takes it upon themselves to change history and commit grievous murder in the name of whatever it is, and we'll get into that in just a moment, that is the ultimate threat to democracy. So the ironies are rich. That photo is absolutely remarkable. The whole situation boils down to this was a shooter that was seen by many people in the crowd. They called attention to the police that, hey, there's a guy climbing the building over there with a carrying a rifle. The building, which was only 130 yards from the podium, it's a one-story kind of a warehouse-looking building that produces plastic and glass for drinking, I guess, vessels or of some kind. I'm not sure exactly what they do, but it's called the AGR company. Anyway, that roof was not defended with a clear line of fire. Typically, from Terry's descriptions over the years, all of those different places that would be threatening, that would be needing to be secured, would have actual personnel on board on the roof. And if not that, at least a couple of officers on either side of the building to prevent somebody from getting up there. It's just unbelievable that the building was not even being guarded. And you're going to get the excuse from the Secret Service twofold. The budget and the resources weren't there to properly staff that event, so they depended on local and state authorities. So they're going to point the finger at the local cops and the state troopers that were dispatched instead of them being responsible. And the second thing is related to that as well. So budget and resources, and they're also going to again say that the presence of the local and state personnel was inadequate and inept. They're not going to take the blame. They're going to pass the buck and say, hey, we secured the perimeter. It was their job to take care of all the things on the outer perimeter. Well, if that building was on the outer perimeter, the perimeter wasn't wide enough, because 130 yards with any kind of firearm is not a long way to take a kill shot at the intended target. And just by the grace of God, Donald Trump is alive today. And I think he realizes that more than anyone, having, as that photo suggested, having that bullet whiz past his ear and actually sever the top part of his ear, which created all of the amazing photos of him defiantly being led away with his fist in the air, yelling, fight, fight, fight. Blood on his face, blood streaming from his ear, which was just literally an inch from a kill shot that would have entered his skull. So, you know, it's one of the most dramatic stories that is depicted with video footage and an actual sound of what was going on as Trump dropped behind the podium and was covered by Secret Service personnel. The response was instantaneous. There's some controversy now of who actually shot and killed the suspect, 20-year-old Thomas Matthew Crooks from New Bethel, Pennsylvania, about 40 miles away. He was in a shooter's position on his belly at the edge of the roof. And here's another thing, which, again, we talk about heavenly providence. This guy was rushed into basically setting up hurriedly. People were already pointing at him, shouting at him, trying to get police attention. A lot of the crowd saw this guy go on the roof, climb the ladder, set up, told police there was no coordination, no effective communication. And again, the failure is unbelievable in terms of the operation of securing that situation. That shooter should not have been noticed by the crowd, should have been noticed by the enforcement personnel that was on the job, particularly the seasoned experts from the Secret Service who obviously identified him quickly as all the chaos ensued, and with a couple of shots took him out right away, and immediately the word went out, shooter down, that he had been shot and killed and was no longer a threat. But there's so many unanswered questions of how a guy can just climb a ladder carrying a rifle, walk across a rooftop, take the position, and start shooting. But the point is, he didn't have time to set up and aim carefully. This guy was rushed because he knew he had been seen. People were shouting, and it's not real high, so he was only maybe 50 feet away from a lot of the spectators below, trying to get law enforcement's attention when those shots were fired. And he was able to squeeze off 7 or maybe even 8 shots. One of them, of course, tragically killing a fireman with his family, his 2 daughters and his wife, who was an avid Trump supporter, was so proud to be there and support his candidate. The Democrat governor of Pennsylvania yesterday gave a glowing tribute to the gentleman. His name was Corey. I have not seen in writing his last name, so I'm not going to attempt to even relate that, but the gentleman, by all accounts of witnesses and his family, was unfortunately struck in the head in an effort to try and push his family to the ground and cover them from harm. And when he made that move, he went right into the path of one of the oncoming bullets headed for the podium, and it took his life. And it's so tragic. Governor Shapiro was saying, and again, he's in the opposite party of how Corey was so proud to be a Trump supporter. He was a devout Catholic who went to church every single Sunday, was great in his community, was beloved by everyone. And it's just a tragic, tragic aspect to this case. That he was the lone fatality. There's 2 other shooting victims still in medical care. One of them remains in critical condition, but hopefully they'll pull through. And what could have been even a more god-awful situation by, again, the grace of God was averted. But we never can forget this one great family man, and apparently just a solid salt of the earth American who lost his life. So now the media, the last couple of days, and I've waxed poetic way too long here, so as usual, I've got to kind of pick up the pace a little bit. But the suspect, who's not a suspect, we know who was responsible. Again, Thomas Matthew Crooks, Crooks, was the assailant. He's 20 years old. He just graduated from high school almost exactly 2 years ago. This is a kid that was working as an assistant dietitian in a rehab, like for physical rehab hospital or medical facility of some kind, probably a private clinic. Not exactly a great job in terms of career prospects, I would imagine. Assistant dietitian sounds to me like the guy who puts the food on the trays, maybe like a cafeteria lady. Not exactly a high level position. And this is a kid who, again, just graduated from high school with some honors in science and math. For achievement. So obviously being math and science oriented, probably a very high IQ, but described by fellow students who a lot of them didn't have very succinct memories of him because he was the ultimate loner, supposedly kept to himself, was not very interactive, was picked on some by, you know, certain individuals at school. Again, I don't put too much into this bullying stuff because at that age. It's just a reality. It's been a reality ever since there have been teenagers and high schools and mass interactions of different personalities. If you're quiet and you're a little bit odd, you're subject to some abuse. The difference in this area is at the end of the school day at 3 o'clock, if you're one of those kids, you can kind of beat a path to home and you have a sanctuary from it until the next morning when you have to go back to school. Well, now with social media, there's no sanctuary. You can be abused online or through your social media contacts or Instagram. If somebody's picking on you, it can be a 24-hour-a-day situation. We don't know any of that. What we do know is this guy was socially isolated. He had a lot of skills. Obviously a high IQ math and science person. And amazingly, this guy was working basically in a cafeteria at a health clinic, not pursuing any kind of studies, which indicates to me that, again, his awkward personality and his kind of sense of lack of self-worth. And I was talking to my son about this last night. And I said, if you look at so many of these shootings, so many of these mass shootings and so many of these high profile situations, like the shooting of Gabby Giffords, the congresswoman from Arizona, shot in the head and somehow survived. Of course, her mental capacity is extremely diminished. Just a heinous act committed by a guy named Jared Loeffner. If you go back and look at so many of these high profile mass shootings and other things, abominations like this on Saturday, it's typically, you can draw immediate commonality. It's so often a kid between 17, 18 years old and 22 and 23. That's really the sector of population that's mostly responsible for these kind of atrocities. And you start to look for the link in that. And I mentioned to my son, they're obviously being loners, socially inactive, which means they probably are frustrated by the fact that they find themselves and label themselves as inadequate and unattractive and unable to have any contact with females. And he said, "Oh yeah, you're talking about incels." And I said, "Explain that term." He says, "It just stands for involuntary celibates." And when you're a 18, 19, 20 year old kid, you've got a lot of mental development. Your brain's shaping into what you're going to be and what you're going to think. And you've got raging biological situations happening where your number one instinct is to, cavort with the opposite sex. And if these guys, and Clayton says there's a whole community of them who basically blame every problem in their existence and every degree of their inadequacy to the fact that they are not able to attract female attention. And it's such a basic kind of a concept, but there's got to be some similarity here. And when you get an individual who's kind of an extreme case that kind of goes into this shell of isolationism and hopelessness, sometimes I think it explodes into these kind of acts where this individual needs to be gain notoriety. And what better way than to shoot up a schoolhouse or, create some kind of incident where innocent victims, the kid in Buffalo was 19 that killed 10 people in a grocery store parking lot last year. This is the common thread to all these people. And if you turn the media on right now, you're going to hear, well, they're scouring this guy's background and looking at all of his associations, which he doesn't have any. He's a loner. Pay attention here. Did he work with somebody else? Not likely. It doesn't sound like he talked to anybody else. This is a guy who was screaming for recognition and identity. And what better way to call attention to oneself, someone who feels insignificant and completely anonymous to the rest of the world, than to take a shot and try and do something so notorious that they're going to be remembered forevermore. And Donald Trump, whether you like him or not, is the most visible, most polarizing, most controversial, most visible person in the entire world. So what better target would there be than when you hear Trump's coming to a rally a half hour from your house, you have access to your father's rifle, you're miserable, you're hopeless, you're hormones are boiling over. Your mental capacity is depleted because you've already sized yourself up as having no chance for any kind of successful life. It's ridiculous that you could reach that conclusion at 20 years old. But that, to me, is the obvious reason that this keeps happening with this particular age group being the persons responsible. And you're not hearing any media talking about that. They're looking for political connections and people that may have driven him to this decision. But Trump was the obvious target, and the convenience of him being so close to where this kid was, this would have been the ultimate act to really say, hey, I exist. I am not obscure. I am not anonymous, and I am not someone to be disregarded. And as crazy as that sounds, I am absolutely convinced, although my psychological degree is from Target, that this is what we're dealing with. You're going to hear all this debate about the rhetoric and the insults and all that plays in. It's absolutely inappropriate for anybody to say Donald Trump is Hitler. Donald Trump is going to be a dictator who's going to destroy this country. It's absolutely ridiculous. Trump has already been president. When his term ended, he thought the election was rigged. A lot of people believe that. I know that there were a lot of inconsistencies, and I have a lot of problems with how that was conducted under emergency circumstances during COVID. But the bottom line is, when January 20th rolled around and Joe Biden was sworn in, Donald Trump packed up his gear and left the premises. This whole thing that he'll never leave. It's just ridiculous. It's just hyperbole, political, and it really needs to stop. And I'll tell you, one great example, as we run short on time here, the great example is Joe Biden, just the night before, said in a speech, well, you heard him say it. He's going to be a dictator from day one. He's declared himself a dictator. That's not what he said. It was an interview with Sean Hannity. So Hannity said, how do you answer that people say you're going to be going there for revenge and you're going to be a dictator and there'll never be another free and fair election? And Trump responded, well, I'll tell you what, on the first day, I'll be a dictator because I'm going to do two things. I'm going to completely secure the border, and I'm going to reopen all of our energy production that Joe Biden has shut down. Drill, baby, drill. That's exactly what he answered the question. He's going to be a dictator on day one because he's going to do the two most important things he thinks this country needs right away to stabilize. He didn't say, I'm going to be a dictator from day one. He said, I'm going to be a dictator on day one. Those meanings are completely, completely different. And he said it while he was chuckling. Now they're using this. If you watch the Democrat ads, they're using that quote, but they're scrambling the words, a dictator on day one, as opposed to a dictator on day one. It's a completely different connotation, and all of this needs to stop, and the public needs to be aware of how things are manipulated to just create this, I don't even know what to call it, facade that, you know, what they say over and over, redundancy will eventually register, and that will become the public narrative. And it's really got to stop. There's got to be people in the media responsible enough to go, well, here's the actual quote. That's not what he said, but you don't have that because you've got a media that's basically complicit to whatever the party in power currently wants them to do. I remember as a child thinking, gosh, if you live in Russia and China, you can't even get any information that's not controlled by the government. That is steps towards a government that we are not founded to have. And it is inconsistent with all of the great freedoms, liberties of the people, by the people, for the people that we hold so dear. So that's some thoughts on what happened this weekend. Going forward, let's see. Trump has supposedly torn up the speech he was going to deliver Thursday night at the convention. He is going to call for unity and healing. And, you know, a person that has a near-death experience like this, if their perspective's not changed, wow, that's something that I can't even imagine. Just the fact that if you are able to go to sleep that night after something like this happens, if you don't wake up in the morning with a whole different mindset and have it's almost like surviving a plane crash. You're not supposed to be here the next day, and you still are. It will change anybody's perspective, and it's going to be fascinating watching everything unfold moving forward. That's some of the things you needed to know. I could go on for hours. I've got a lot of information on my Facebook page and on social media, a lot of writings about this subject. So catch all that, because right now I seem to be one of the only people talking about this. The commonality between these assailants responsible for these heinous acts, these abominable situations that should never occur. And so much of the time, it's only takes, and this I'll leave you with, it only takes one act of human kindness to reach out to somebody who may be in trauma or maybe dealing with a lot of misconceptions about the world and themselves. A lot of times you give somebody a leg up, and it can make such a difference. Every single one of us probably knows some people that, you know, think, well, this guy or girl's a little odd. She probably just needs some attention and acknowledgement that you are a significant human being. It doesn't take much to do that. And there's so many ways to express those sentiments. A delivery person that comes to your door that seems a little off and hands you your food. You know, don't just close the door in their face. Ask them how their day is going. Just be kind to your fellow human beings. That's a good basic starting point to try maybe to reach some of these people that are seemingly unreachable because they do not have the advantage of, you know, kind human contact. I'm Kip Kiefer. That's Need to Know on the Tony Curry Network. We'll be back next week. Don't miss Kiefer and Curry coming up this week. Tony and I will be talking about whatever subjects come to mind. And of course, the starting lineup, ABC 3340, Saturday mornings, 10:30. Football season just 5 weeks away. Can't wait. We are going to have the best lead-in show to the SEC on ABC every week on Channel 3340 at 10:30. Don't ever miss it. I'm Kip Kiefer. That's what you need to know. Thanks for listening.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.